Golf Smarter number 110 for January 22, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Phil Mickelson and actor Chris O'Donnell, kinda.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf answers questions about U.S. kids clubs, aging wedges, and sweaty hands. One of the cool things about doing this podcast is over the past 2 years, some consider me part of the golf press. I guess if bloggers can get a press credential, then why can't a podcaster, right? So last week, organizers of the 2008 AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am held their annual press conference at Stanford University. There were about 20 to 30 reporters, and only a couple people brought audio recorders, and no one was videotaping. So, since you probably didn't get to read or hear much about the press conference, I thought I could play you some of the highlights that are relevant to the Golf Smarter audience. After the press conference, we were invited to go out and play the course at Stanford University on the campus, which is a great old course. And it's amazing to play in a course that's not crowded and the course management is not panicked about generating revenue. It's not open to the public. It's only open to students, faculty, and alumni. So you don't have any problem getting on. And also, knowing that players like Tom Watson, Nota Begay, Michelle Wee, and of course Tiger Woods played there while attending school is pretty cool. And one of my playing partners that day was Joe Starkey, who since 1975 has been the play-by-play announcer of the San Francisco 49ers, and you may have also heard his call of the play, which may be the greatest moment in college football. He's also the Cal football announcer. That's when the Cal Bears beat Stanford as the band was coming onto the field, and Starkey was going nuts. It made him quite famous in the world of play-by-play. Anyway, having Joe doing play-by-play of my drives and putting was pretty exciting for a Bay Area sports fan like myself. So, back to the press conference. In attendance was actor Chris O'Donnell, who is playing in his 10th AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. You may know Chris from his appearances in the movies Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino, Three Musketeers, and for me, his most memorable role was Robin in Batman Forever, 1995. Joining the press conference on the phone was Phil Mickelson. Unfortunately, they were having lots of problems getting their PA system to work properly. So occasionally, you'll hear the engineer in the background trying to figure out how to make it work for Phil. Not all of the conversation was about the AT&T, and that's what I was most interested in talking about. During one of the technical glitches, while people were standing around twiddling their thumbs not knowing what to do, I raised my hand and thought it was time to ask Chris O'Donnell a question. Now, since I'm not what you would call traditional press, I don't necessarily ask traditional questions. So I asked Chris O'Donnell, as an amateur, how he deals with the intimidation of playing in such high-profile event that's on global TV, and how can he possibly deal with that kind of pressure?
I very delicately sedate myself. One cold beer before I play, and I'm not kidding. People don't understand, and I think it gives everyone, especially the first time you play in the AT&T, you get a much better understanding of what these players go through on a weekly basis and the pressure that they're under because, you know, you just going out and playing with your buddies at the club or at your local course, you know, if you have a 5-5-10 or something, there's no comparison. You're not nervous. But when that camera's on you and you got a putt that's this long, that's normally a little tap in, that suddenly looks like the craziest putt you've ever seen in your life. And I feel like it's deja vu. I get up on that 18th tee at Pebble every year, and all I can think about is I just want to finish the hole. You know, and inevitably I'm either in the water left, and then so then I overcorrect and say, well, I'm going to aim way right, and I blast it out of bounds. Or one time I hit a guy on the head. He had to bring an ambulance out for him. But the ball shot so far off his head, it was about a 330-yard drive. And the announcers, Chris O'Donnell's really nailed the drive today, you know, and they couldn't believe how long it was. Meanwhile, there's a guy laying down on the side of the fairway. But I think it makes you a better golfer. I really do. I come away after this tournament, and I usually play great golf. But when I'm there, I feel like a complete idiot. I mean, you forget the most basic things about golf. And what happens is it's almost like you're playing in a scramble or something, because here you've got the tees are way up, you know, because they're trying to make it a little more forgiving for you. But especially, of course, like Poppy, there's nowhere to hit the ball. You know, there's these little dog legs, and you've got, you know, I have Scott McCarron or whoever is my pro, and you know he's going to make par, so you might as well go for it. So you start flailing at the ball at these tiny little landing areas, and you end up finishing about half the holes. So, you know, thank God when you get out to Pebble, there's a little room to spray the ball, because that's usually my problem. But it's the best.
Personally, I don't think I would be able to sleep the night before an event like this. But I was curious to know if there was any way for Chris to prepare for playing at the AT&T Pro-Am. Sitting next to Chris was the MC for the event, a guy named Bob Murphy, who's the voice of Stanford University Sports. So he had a story to tell as well.
I try and steal a free driver from one of the trucks as part of my preparation. there's usually something good. Mata, the guy from Titleist, is pretty scary and intimidating, so usually have better luck at the other places. No, but I've got a good TaylorMade driver this year. We'll see.
How about this one, Chris? The first year I played, I was all excited, and I went down there, and I'm going to play at Pebble with a little-known pro from Georgia. And I can't remember how many shots I had. I think I had 6 shots or something like that. And I couldn't do anything on 1, couldn't do anything on 2. I think my partner made birdie on 2. Couldn't do anything on 3 or 4 or 5. Had a chance on 6, the 5-par out to the ocean, and hit a good tee shot, got it up there in good shape. Hit a nice little 9-iron about 15 feet, had a stroke on the hole, and 3-putted. Then we went down to 6. Out there, seven out, the little 3-par out on the end there. And I was first to hit, and I knocked it about 8 inches from the hole, and I thought, this is it, baby. I've got a score on the card. And my partner hit it about 6 feet behind the hole and spun it in backwards for an ace. So it's the first time I ever really was not too excited about seeing a hole-in-one.
Now, this was a press conference, so I was not the only one asking questions, as you'll hear. But as a matter of perspective, I wanted to know what kind of golfer Chris O'Donnell is.
My game's okay. I just got beat in the tournament at the club by a 66-year-old guy straight up. I was a little bit pissed off about. But other than that, I've been playing okay. Living in L.A., you can play all year long. And I grew up in Chicago, where you put the clubs away for half the year. And it's unusual, because you actually get burnt out on golf. And so over the holidays and stuff, I didn't play much. But I'm raring to go, and I'll get a lesson in between now and then. The guy I take lessons from is in Arizona or Chicago. He goes back and forth, and so I never get to see him, which is my excuse why I'm not a better golfer. But I'm gonna do all right this year. I'm scheduled to win, but I don't know if that's, you know. Yes.
What is your handicap, Chris? And what's in your bag?
I'm about a 6 handicap. I think my index is a 5 something, which I'll be probably 13, I guess, for the tournament.
Oh yeah.
In my bag, I've got almost all Titleists. I have a new TaylorMade driver that I have not played with that I just got. I got a youngest guy in the world to have a belly putter. But, you know, you can't argue with success. The ball goes in the hole. So, and I've got some of those Mizuno fly highs, those little hybrids that I carry 2 of those. I like them because, you know, those hybrids that look like woods. You know, I grew up on a course that was OB right the whole way around. And every time I hit a fairway wood, I'd slice it out of bounds. So I'm paranoid about hitting fairway woods. So I like those fly highs because I feel like I can hood it a little bit. Excuse me?
What ball?
Titleist Pro V1. One in the silver and black box there. Or whatever nice one somebody sent me.
Then they finally got the technical difficulties in order, and the questions for Phil Mickelson started coming in. I'm going to let this run for a bit because he's talking about other things other than the AT&T. There was an opportunity for me to ask a question as well, so I'll let you figure out which one was me, kind of like the Where's Waldo podcast.
Yeah, Phil, I just wanted to ask... I know that you mentioned some up and downs last year, and I know that you had some up and downs with the FedEx Cup, but there was some good and some bad, it seems like, for all the players. What did you take out of the FedEx Cup and the earlier finish, and how do you bring that into this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of elements as
this plays out. And one of the interesting things for me was having the season end early gave me a chance to do a number of things here in San Diego with my family, with my kids, but it also gave me a chance to go international and play 2 weeks internationally, which I would not have done in under the normal scenario of our schedule. And so I'm hoping that by having the FedEx Cup and the tour season in the middle or late September, that the last 3 months of the year, some of the top players in the world will compete more internationally and bring and kind of help grow the game of golf or grow the awareness of the game of golf to different parts of the world. I'm hoping that that's one of the positive byproducts of the shorter season.
In the wake of comments about the FedEx Cup, obviously it's a Ryder Cup year, and I know there was a week off built into the schedule, but still you guys are going to go through all the postseason, quote-unquote, before the Ryder Cup. How will that affect the Ryder Cup, do you think? Will it affect the quality of play or your sort of physical and emotional state going into that?
I think that the FedEx Cup has helped our play and will continue to help our play in team competitions like it did at the President's Cup. I believe we'll see the same carryover effect into the Ryder Cup because it has kept us, it has kept the players sharp and on top of their game for an additional 6 weeks. Whereas typically after the last major championship, the PGA, the season, nothing really after that point really makes a difference in your year or whatnot. And so a lot of times we just won't be focused or we won't be practicing. But I think the FedEx Cup will carry our play and our desire and our focus for another 6 weeks right into the team competition. I think it'll have a very positive effect on the U.S. team's play.
Yep.
Yeah, Phil, are you going to be someday designing some golf courses?
I have designed some golf courses. My first one opened a few years ago, actually, in North Scottsdale called Whisper Rock. And I do have a couple of golf courses in the works that we should break ground here in the next 6 to 12 months. It's not an area that I want to do as a full-time business, but I do try to do between 1 and 3 courses at a time because I really enjoy the challenge and the creativity that it forces me to have in designing holes.
Phil, this is a little bit offbeat here, but it used to be that Kikuyu was something you never wanted to talk about or see around a golf course, and Riviera's all Kikuyu now, and Kikuyu fairways at Torrey Pines, it appears now. Can you talk about that a little bit and how it's changed the game or different kind of approach to shot making?
Well, Kikuyu fairways are terrific because the leaf of the grass is so strong, the ball sits up beautifully. Where Kikuyu grass is so tough is the rough, as we notice around the greens at Riviera. It's so difficult to control your golf ball, and I think it's most evident around the 18th green. You see, as a spectator, some of the worst short game shots imaginable around that 18th green because that grass is so difficult.
A lot more lefties are coming out on the tour now. How about that? They trying to challenge you?
Well, it's pretty cool, I think, that we're starting to see more left-handed players. And what that's also doing is continues to have left-handed equipment on the same timeline now as right-handed equipment as opposed to a 6 to 8 month lag period. And so I think that's exciting. And hopefully we'll continue the growth for left-handed players because it really should not matter what side of the golf ball you stand on. It should be what's most comfortable for you. So if we have more success from left-handed players on tour, we should continue to gain more acceptance in the golfing public. But we still get our share of some snide remarks.
I know that your sister teaches privately and your brother is involved with coaching on the college level. How often do you guys get to play anymore, and how fierce is the competition when you get together?
Well, my sister and I don't get to play too much, but we do try to go out at least a few times. My brother and I play quite a bit. He's the golf coach at University of San Diego and has taken the program from 216th ranking up to around 50th. And so he's done a great job there. We try to go out and play whenever I'm in town, whenever he's in town, which is quite a bit. He's a very good player, and we do have some good little matches. There certainly is a sibling rivalry there, but I'm confident in my results against him.
Do you ever get a chance to go out and play with the kids on the team?
I take my kids after school whenever they want to go. We are very close to two golf courses, the Bridges and then Rancho Santa Fe Country Club, and we'll just hop in. We have a golf cart that's a five-minute ride, and we just hop in and go hit a few balls after school. And they're really starting to take an interest and enjoy it, and that's the biggest thing. And so we've had fun doing that.
To wrap up the meeting, Phil had one last thing to say about playing in the 2008 AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, which runs from February 2nd to February 10th.
This is one of my favorite tournaments of the year. I'm very much looking forward to seeing everybody in a few weeks, and hopefully we'll continue to have some great weather like we've had the last few years and showcase what a wonderful place the Monterey Peninsula is, and I'll see you guys soon.
It's time once again to Ask Kenny. Do you need informed answers about specific golf gear? Or do you have questions about what to look for when you're buying new golf products? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at edwinwattsgolf.com, is here to help. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. America's Golf Club.
Good morning, Fred.
Good morning,
was that my
Kenny.
Was that my introduction?
That was your place to come in. The music kind of faded out. You can't even hear the music when I'm doing this, can you?
No.
You can't.
No.
I didn't think so.
No.
Well,
can't.
That's okay. I'm getting tired of the music. But it's your theme
it.
Music, not my theme music, okay?
Yeah.
So we'll have to change the music. Or change you, I think, is what we're going to have to do. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Come on. You're selling me out.
No, no, no. Don't want to go there, Kenny. We have some questions today covering a wide array of topics, which I always enjoy. And the first one we're going to do is from Dan Story, who writes from Robbins, Tennessee. Do you know where Robbins, Tennessee is?
I do not. I believe it's in the eastern part of Tennessee. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. So you wouldn't know if there's a store near there, for an Edwin Watts store or not near him.
Well, we have Nashville and Memphis, so we cover, from the middle over to the west, so hopefully he's close. If not, he can pack a lunch and drive over.
Well, Dan, you've already been given instructions. Now we're going to try to answer your question. He writes, I understand the importance of getting fitted for clubs. I've also seen in some forums horror stories of being fitted at local courses and retail stores where someone doesn't know what they're doing, and they recommend seeing someone who's certified in this area. Now, Tom Wishon, who we've talked to a number of times, and Dan obviously heard those interviews, he mentions something about that in the shows that we did. So he wants to know, where does Edwin Watts Golf stand in training their employees on getting fitted for clubs?
Which is a really good question. All of our stores have a certified club fitter, or in some cases we have PGA professionals that work on a contract basis with us. And the sales guys that we have in our mail order and internet division, the majority of those are certified club fitters through Ping. So everybody has the knowledge and ability to be able to fit you. And at every one of our retail locations, we have what's called the Edwin Watts Golf Academy, which we have hands-on instruction or video lessons available, as well as club fitting. They all use the Vector Launch Monitor system, which gives you an accurate portrait of ball flight, spin rate, ball speed, everything that you need to be able to fit you into the correct driver. They also all use the golf simulator, which allows you to basically virtually track the ball flight, the spin, everything that you need to be able to get fitted. So I am definitely can say that we're capable of taking care of all of your needs, whether it's just club fitting or lessons at all of our retail locations.
Well, I'm happy to say that last year when I was in Florida and Fort Lauderdale, and I went to the local store there and I was fitted for my clubs and got all the information after the fitting and talked to the salesman about what clubs he would recommend. Then I took that information and I brought it back and started talking to you about what his findings were. And you pretty much concurred with the same clubs of which ones I should buy, and I ended up buying from you. And I'll tell you, my game has gotten better. I'm feeling a lot more confident than I ever have on how I'm playing.
Wonderful. He is just to let you know, he is northwest of Knoxville and northeast of Nashville. So he's very close to Kentucky. So he's not that far from Nashville that he couldn't drive there.
I'm sure he understands he wouldn't be asking about how you guys do it.
If he wasn't able to drive over to Nashville.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thanks for the letter, and we'll send you a hat if we haven't already. I think I definitely recognize his name. But we'll definitely get a hat out to you, and you can share it with a friend. All right, second question. This one comes from Tom Keller, who I know has written to us before. He said that he's recently read, he's not sure if he heard it or he read it, the advice to buy two new wedges of the same degree and same bounce configuration and only use one of them for playing. The other should be used for practice, like in the bunkers and stuff. This would keep a playing wedge sharp in terms of the grooves, thus allowing maximum bite. Is this true? Do wedges really wear down this quickly? And can a high handicap player really notice a difference in groove wear?
You cannot wear a wedge down fast enough to make buying two wedges a smart decision. I mean, I would use one wedge for practice and play. And when you notice a difference in groove wear, buy another wedge. You know, the problem with buying two wedges at one time is technology is going to change possibly, and you're going to have, you know, old technology in a brand new golf club. You're not going to wear it out. The leading edge, definitely not. And the grooves takes a long time to wear. I mean, you really have to pound a lot of golf balls to wear grooves out. It takes an awful long time, and I don't see it very often here unless somebody has used a wedge over a year or two, and that's one of the main clubs that they practice with at the driving range. So I wouldn't advise buying two. No, not at all. I mean, wedges aren't the most expensive club in the bag. You're looking at about anywhere from $90 to $120. And economically, it's not worth the spend. I would just wait, and when your wedge starts to wear out, get you a new one.
And can you have the grooves regrooved?
You can have them regrooved if you just absolutely fall in love with a wedge. I mean, I think wedges are like putters. A lot of people, you know, you don't see a lot of wedges for sale in the used market just because, you know, it's not an extremely expensive club. People tend to hang on to them. If you get a new wedge and you're not playing it great, you can always go back to that special wedge that you love. And the same thing with putters. You know, guys tend to, or ladies tend to hang on to putters. You know, if you putt bad with one, you always go back to your old trusty one that you feel real comfortable with. But you can have them regrooved, but the cost is going to be a third, if not half, of a new wedge. So, you know, I would typically look at going into the new wedge side of it. Now, they do sell a groove tool that you can buy for yourself, but, you know, it might not be a perfectly straight line, but at least there'll be a groove there.
It's just flat and dried out.
Yeah.
And I'm actually very curious to know about rust on a wedge. I've heard that rust on a wedge is a good thing. Is this true? No, I mean, do I get a hat for this question?
Yeah, you can have a hat,
Fred,
for this question. But, you know, they make RTG wedges, which stands for raw tour grind. And what that does is the wedge is supposed to rust over time. And one, it gives it a very classic look, you know, similar to an older golf club. But anytime you create rust on the face of a golf club, it's going to create friction, which is going to cause spin. You know, grooves don't have as much to do with spin as one would think, you know, but the surface of the face of the golf club has a lot to do with it. So anytime there's rust on a face, it's definitely going to cause more spin. I mean, it's personal preference. I have some raw tour grind wedges that I like to play with because of the look more so than just being able to create spin.
And what do you mean by the look?
It gives it a very rustic look. When it's rusted like it's supposed to, A lot of people like that. I mean, that's why they have now black ox wedges, satin finish. A lot of people have shied away from chrome now just because of the glare. You know, with the face angle, you know, obviously there's more glare in your face, so they get either a satin, a black, or an RTG just to keep glare down.
Very interesting. Okay.
But it's strictly personal preference on that issue.
Okay. Well, I hope that answers his question. Norman Chang of Napa, California, has a couple kids, and he's looking at getting the U.S. Kids Clubs for him. He's got a 7-year-old daughter who wants to learn how to play, and there he says he wants to know, is there a difference between orange versus tangerine sets for the little kids? He also has a 2-year-old boy that may want to play in a few years, so he's going to be able to hang on to that set. But it's a boy and a girl, so... Is there any difference in the colors?
If we answer his question, we have to get a bottle of wine from Napa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's not far from you.
No, he's not. We've actually communicated about, because I know that we've sent him a hat before, and people he said have commented and asked about what it was and what the hat was and what Edwin Watts Golf is, because here in Northern California, we don't know about Edwin Watts Golf unless you receive the catalog or listen to the podcast. And so we talked about if we both were wearing hats, it would really create a commotion at the golf course.
Yeah, so you guys could actually meet in a central location
Northern California players that communicate with me. We've emailed back and forth, and I've played with a number of them, and I really enjoy it. I like going out and seeing, because I get a lot of information that I don't generally get just talking to you, which is not a bad thing. But I, you know, more information to me, the better, and more questions I can ask. And I feel educated when I talk to listeners.
I get that. Now, back to his question.
Let's talk about the...
Yeah, there's
let's,
no...
No,
there's...
let's talk about the wine. I want to see if we can get that wine. You're absolutely right.
I've been out there to Napa, and it was very cool. Yeah. I enjoyed that. So he lives in a
great golf course, breathtaking
area. Yeah, there is. But his question on what's the difference between orange and tangerine, and the difference is there's absolutely none. It just has to do with one is considered girls and one is considered boys. You know, in certain age groups, we have the pink. Or the red set, obviously pink for girls, red for boys. Unless you're Bubba Watson not on tour, he'll play the pink set. I mean, he's got pink shafts. He wears a lot. He has a lot of pink stuff.
So the difference is for U.S. Kids Club is the age of the kid or the size of the kid.
Right, correct. And they spell
is that
out
when they change colors?
Yeah, for kids 3 to 5, it's red or pink, and then they have blue or lavender. Which blue is boys, lavender is girls. They're exactly the same. They're both for 5 to 7. And in his question, what's the difference between orange and tangerine? It's 7 to 9 year olds. One's boys and one's girls. That's it. There's no difference. You know, he's got two kids near the same age. What I would possibly do is think about buying a set for like, depending on their age, if one of them's 8.5 or 9, buying the 10 to 13 set and then buying one orange or tangerine set. That way they can kind of mix, you know, go between the two.
Okay. You know, and I guess the best thing to do, because it's not that big of a difference, is let his daughter decide what color she wants, right?
Yeah, but he's got I guess is his daughter. He has one daughter and then one son that's 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just let the daughter pick. It's strictly, you know, personal preference. My daughter has a Ping Moxie set, and it only comes in blue at the time, so they didn't cater to boys and girls. U.S. Kids specializes in just kids clubs, so they cater to every need out there. You know, his daughter probably wouldn't mind playing orange. That way, when his son gets older, he has a set of golf clubs already.
Exactly.
So, good question, and great that he's getting his kids involved.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm a huge proponent of... taking kids.
And U.S. Kids has a great trade-up program, right?
They have a trade-in, trade-up program, absolutely, and it's a terrific program where you can take those clubs that you've used for years and trade them back in and get you some new clubs
maybe,
at a reduced price.
Maybe this spring or late in the spring we can get U.S. Kids to come on to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, and we can do an episode with them, and they can really educate us. How's that?
They would do that in a heartbeat.
Oh, awesome. We should do that. I absolutely think we should do that.
Yeah, it would be good. I think it would be great because we do get a lot of questions about kids.
Yes, we do.
Out there
a lot of people wanting to get their kids into it. No question.
Yeah, and
about
it's, you know, it's it's different. I see in this day and age, it seems like, that more husbands or dads or moms are taking kids out and enjoying a round of golf, whether it be once a week or once a month. It's just, to me, it's a good stress reliever. It's a communication tool for you and your kids to get out there and just relax and have fun. If you haven't done it, do it. You'd be amazed. They don't just like to go run and play in the bunker and then you have to rake it all up for them. They actually enjoy trying to hit the golf ball in the hole.
It'll
absolutely. Take a little while, but it's fun.
Yeah, well, it takes a while for us too. All right, last question for today comes from Rob Zimmerman of Nashua, New Hampshire. And he says, for those of us with overly sweaty hands, even in normal conditions, is there a brand of glove that you'd recommend for better grip?
I mean, what he needs to do is I have the same situation. I mean, I have warm blood. My body temperature seems to be on the rise when I'm playing golf, and I play here in Florida where it's very humid and very hot. I always take my glove off after every shot, whether I'm walking to the next shot or riding in a cart.
Really, after every shot?
After every shot, I don't wear a glove when I putt. So whenever I hit my drive, I simply take my glove off and stick it in my back pocket, and I put it back on the next shot. If you're going to wear it the whole time, obviously there's going to create an issue there with sweat and perspiration, whether it's running down your arm, and getting on your glove from the wrist portion down, or just simply soaking through. But what, a lot of carts that have tops, they have the metal bars up in front, and they have Velcro on the sides of those where you can just take your glove off and attach it to the side of the cart and let it air out. Or like what pros do a lot of is have two gloves, three gloves, and they just rotate between holes. That way one's not getting a lot of moisture on every hole. And it's a small expense to do that. But in his case, if he's sweating a lot, I would carry two gloves and just rotate. It's not that big of a deal, but try to not wear it the whole time you're playing. I would take it off between shots.
Good.
You know, and you get used to it. I mean, it's not like somebody sitting there waiting for me to put a glove on as we're driving up to the ball. I'm going ahead and putting my glove on or what have you. So, and I don't have that big of I only carry one glove per round. I don't rotate. And I don't have a problem because I switch between shots. And it's, here in Florida where it's very hot and humid, you're going to sweat a lot.
Well, one of the things we've talked about windage a number of times on this show, and we've even given a bunch of them away to people we've played with and on the show. And one of the things they recommend for windage is not only to be able to check the wind speed and direction, but use it as a talc. If your hands are sweaty, it's like having a little container of baby powder with you.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's real similar to what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And so that works really well. You can use
great
windage.
Plug for them, Fred. Good job.
Thank you. I like those guys. And check them out. And if you're curious, they're going. Well, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it.
Yeah,
check them out online. I don't think. I don't know if they want me to talk about it. But if you're curious at all, just go online and start Googling the guys from Windage and some Minnesota newspapers, and you'll see what they're doing to try to get their product out in the world. It's really interesting, and we wish them good luck. Okay. We've been doing a giveaway for the last week. We announced a new one, and that would be the Step to Swing product. Can you explain this a little bit for me? Step to Swing, what we're giving away?
It's a training aid that gets your feet in the correct position and the golf club in the correct position. It has a place for you. It lays on the ground flat and a place for your feet. Your right foot obviously stays in a certain area, and your left foot, depending on which iron you're using, it tells you where your feet should be from your shoulder width and also placement of the golf ball. It's a great training aid. A lot of people don't know the correct placement of the golf ball. If you're not with a professional teacher or getting lessons, it's hard to figure out where's the wedge supposed to be ball position-wise versus where's the driver supposed to be. And this is a great training aid to be able to show you the correct position of your feet and the ball. And then you'd be surprised, whenever you look at it, if you're doing it wrong. Whenever I used it, I was like, man, I never played my wedge back that far. But it does make a difference, and for me, it helped create a lot of spin. I was hitting more down on the ball. So
interesting.
It'd be neat for some. I'm anxious to whoever wins it to give us some feedback on it to see how they liked it.
Well, if alignment and the alignment that you have in your position over the ball is an issue for you at all over the next couple of weeks on the Golf Smarter Tips show with Kirk Jones of the Golf Institute of Technology, he's going to be addressing those things of grip, posture, alignment, and positioning over the ball. So those are you should check that out at golfsmartertips.com. But if you'd like to win a Step to Swing, a deadline for entry is Monday, January 28th, post-Super Bowl. And the drawing will be held on the 29th of January, 2008. If you'd like to enter, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest. Once there, fill out your shipping information, the verification code, then click submit. Also remember that as a Golf Smarter listener, you receive 10% off any purchase and you receive free shipping at Edwin Watts Golf. Now, there are some restrictions that apply, but to get your discount and free shipping, you can go to golfbetterpodcast.com, the show we do with Edwin Watts Golf, and click on the button labeled Special Offer for Podcast Listeners, and it'll give you all the instructions on how to get your 10% off and your free shipping. Also want to mention, because I've been receiving email questions about it, we are giving away a SkyCaddy SG5. We've stopped the entries, but we will be announcing the winner on the next episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. And that will be coming up soon. We're going to do another year in review, but we're going to be looking at something different. Hopefully that will be up by the end of this week. Fingers crossed. And I did want to mention, Kenny, I don't know if you've seen this, golf.com, or golf. I don't know if it's Golf Magazine, but it's golf.com. They have a really good article this month on selecting the right ball called The Best Ball for You.
Mm-hmm. We do partner with them some. So.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah, and I went through and looked at it and was very happy to see that the ball that I'm playing with is listed for my type of player. And I think the way they have it set up, you can really figure out who you're if you're that type of player, and then they give you multiple options on which ball to play in various price ranges. But I was happy to see that it would work for me.
Yeah, and when they do that, they're not sold on the specific manufacturer. They really give you the options that are best for you. So it makes it, you know, it's not a bot advertisement. They put a lot of study into it.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, that's it for this week, Kenny. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Fred.
Thanks, bud. And since we were able to deliver you the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am Press Conference, we'll talk next week to Bob Montello about putting. Bob's a disciple of Jeff Mangum. More and more of you are taking advantage of joining and posting comments on the Golf Smarter blog and taking advantage of the Smarter Shopping pages. Smarter Shopping is the easiest way for you to purchase any of the books we featured on Golf Smarter or any of the podcasts on smarterpodcasts.com. Just go there, click on the button that says Smarter Shopping, and you can find whatever you're looking for and order it right there. Final call for caddytips.com/golfsmarter. As a listener to our golf podcasts, you have till January 31st, 2008 to receive 50% on all of your orders. Caddy tips are shot-by-shot advice for players of all levels on specific courses around the United States, Ireland, and Scotland. The content is written by members of the Professional Caddies Association and is downloadable and printable. Please let all your friends know about this generous offer. Again, go to caddytips.com/golfsmarter, caddytips.com/golfsmarter for full details. We look again to the history books to close out this week's show. This past week, we remember 1971. It was January 17th, 1971, just after the Baltimore Colts defeated the Dallas Cowboys 16-13 in Super Bowl V. The TV network switched from the game to the final round of the Bing Crosby Pro-Am, now known as the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. Interesting. 55 million people were watching, making it the largest golf audience in history. That day, Tom Shaw won the event by 2 strokes over Arnold Palmer. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
I always tell people two of the most important tools on the puppy truck are Kleenex, because we cry right along with the raisers who are giving their dogs back, and of course, poop bags.
I was shocked to learn how many people and how many hours go into the creation of a guide dog.
You know, the interesting thing about being a dog trainer at Guide Dogs is that you not only have to be a world-class dog trainer, but you also have to be a world-class teacher.
It's not just about companionship. Guide Dogs make judgments every day to keep their blind partners safe.
I really got to give credit to Guide Dogs for the Blind for saving her life.
I cannot imagine my life without my guide dog.
I'm Joanne Green, host of the Good Dog Podcast. Join me for an incredible journey on the Guide Dog Podcast. Subscribe for free on iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.